Hello, everybody, and welcome to Fort's Comic News, episode 329. I am one of your hosts, Chris, alongside my co-host here, Mike. What's going on, Mike?
Nothing, man. You know, just chilling. Bought some more storage for comics. I bought a physical comic out in the wild. Oh
man, this weekend, everybody, it begins.
Justice Society number 5, just for that awesome cover with Jay Garrick on the front. You know, all the Justice Society members. Let
me hold that. That was a great cover.
It's a great cover. And then the comic shop owner told me I needed to flip to the last page. I haven't read the story yet, but I did flip to like the last couple pages. So I saw like the Justice Society all assembled and sitting there. So that was pretty neat. Pretty cool. Other than that, I really haven't read a lot of comics, but what's going on with you?
I read enough for the both of us, apparently.
Nice. Perfect. It always seems to happen. One of us does the reading one of the weeks.
Not much. It's been a long week. We talked about last week, but Cat had surgery. All went well. Yeah.
Good.
He's back to normal. But so I've been, I'll apologize ahead of time. If he like goes nuts in the background, he is stir crazy right now.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But yeah, he's doing good. We've been chilling, playing video games, reading comics together, just hanging out.
Nice. Little Greedo. We have a slew of interviews today. We're going to have the Cthulhu crew here.
Invades Wonderland. Neverland.
Yeah, no, we're on the third installment from the Cthulhu Invades, so we'll have a bunch of creators on today about that.
Yeah, the Ringo-nominated anthology series.
Yes.
From the bum himself, Travis Gibb.
Yeah, he wasn't nominated. The anthology series.
It's everybody else did such a good job that it made up for his work. That's what happened.
Yeah. Love you, Travis. And then we got a little surprise in the mail from Boom Studios. So we're going to be kind enough to talk about it. A Vicious Circle, third installment is coming out. They sent us this nice little press kit. I got this candle here, this Vicious Circle candle. And it smells like, this is what they describe the smell as. The scent-changing candle begins in 1950s New Orleans, so immediately I thought it smelled like piss, and then ends in the Cretaceous era. I can't act like I know what Cretaceous means, but the smell to me, Chris, because I know you got one as well, smells like waffles, like in syrup. It smells really good. It's like a maple bourbon.
See, I thought mine was like a vanilla cake, and I was like, I didn't maybe know dinosaurs smelled like vanilla cake.
And I was like, it's got Cretaceous era, or like, I don't know. Who knows? But either way, it's a cool little candle, cool little thing. And then the books are, I didn't know they were doing like magazine size format, dude. These are like heavy duty books. If anybody's reading Black Label from DC, this is the style. And just look at this art, like, friggin' pops. Like, look at that. Amazing.
Yeah, stuff. Dude. I can't wait for you to read it too, because like when they time travel, some of the art style changes.
Yeah. I'm excited for it. Mattson Tomlin, Lee Bermejo. Lee Bermejo's art has always been absolutely amazing. When he did some Batman stuff, it's wacky and crazy. So I'm really excited. Thanks again to Boom Studios. They've been doing great stuff. You know, don't sleep on Boom Studios, people.
Yeah, they're doing some really cool stuff. They're not just the Rick and Morty house anymore.
Yeah, right. They're like, we could diversify too. We got cool, really edgy stuff. So, yeah, check it out.
Definitely. So, we will not be talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles today. Unless you saw it. I don't think you did.
I did not see it.
Yeah, I'll be seeing it after we're done recording. So.
Oh, okay. So you got to go.
Yeah, we'll talk about it next week, just so everybody knows ahead of time. That's why it's not being talked about. I promised my nephew I would go with him, and the only time we can go is after I'm done recording here. So,
Cool,
the
man.
The bum got a job.
Yeah.
How dare he? Now I have to work around his schedule.
Wow. Imagine that. What a piece of crap. I did see you post on Twitter that that retro Batman action figure. I was like, shit, I gotta buy myself one of those.
Dude, McFarlane. So they're doing another wave of Batman 66 figures, and they're so good.
Yeah, dude, they're so good. And you gotta order them online, because anytime you go look at Target, they only ever have like the villains or Robin. You never find the Batman figures.
You will not find the villains in this one. Like, you might find the skeleton villain. I forget his name now. Oh, I don't know. It's bugging me. I'll figure it out in a second. But okay. You might find him, but the Joker dude. Yeah. The Joker they're putting out is so awesome.
Yeah, I'm gonna look up the rest of these. I like the robot one. I showed you, they came out for everybody that doesn't know the DC.
It's Lord Deathman, everybody.
Oh yes, Lord Deathman, of course. By the way, did you read Peacemaker Tries Hard this week?
I did.
People were like going crazy about Snowflame making an appearance, everybody. If you all remember the shitty villain of the week we used to talk about, Snowflame was one of our first on the show. Throwback. We got to reach out to the writer of that book and talk. I can't remember who's writing it, but
it's Kyle Starks. Haven't we had him on the show?
Oh, yeah. Before? We might have had Starks on the show. We got to get him back.
I'll reach out. I'm pretty sure we've had him on the show before.
You're like, dude, we were talking about Snowflame, like this was years ago, Chris. This had to be 4 or 5 years ago. We talked about Snow.
We're trendsetters. I mean, look, Codpiece is on the show.
Half a decade ago.
Yeah, Codpiece is on the show on Max.
Yes.
Snowflame's back. I mean,
come on.
It's only a matter of time before Obnoxio the Clown comes to Marvel. Yeah. Like,
I mean, we're ahead of the curve here. We're ahead of the trends.
Actually, Obnoxio the Clown did come back to Marvel recently.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Oh, God.
I was really so
it's already happened.
Yeah.
Yep. Here we are, just a couple of guys shooting the shit about comics. What do we know, Chris? We don't know shit.
No.
Diddly squat.
No.
That's what we know.
Just idiots on the internet.
That's why we talk to other people. all right, let's jump into the news, I guess, here. Disney Plus released a trailer for Loki Season 2 with a release date of October 6th. Yeah, watch the trailer, Chris. It looks pretty good. Short round, isn't it? Yeah, see, Chris has got the trailer right here.
Oh, we don't want... Yeah, right there.
Yeah, we're gonna run through the trailer in real time, folks, because that's what we can do now on the show.
We have the technology.
Short round. It looks like... And I apologize, I can't remember his name. He looks like he's playing the character from Everything Everywhere All at Once. You know, that's how the trailer really starts off. And I don't know how much he's going to be in the show, but I hope he's in the show a lot because I think he's very charming.
I mean, he's pretty much center stage of this trailer.
And
first half.
Yeah. But I don't want the first half of the show. I don't want the first 5 minutes of the show to be like, okay, they talk to this guy about what's happening and then we never see him again. We do see Kang show up, so I was like, "Hey!"
centered
around Kang.
Yeah, this was shot a while ago, so that Jonathan Majors is going to be in this.
Yeah, but I wonder if there's any edits on how it's going to affect anything moving forward. This seems to be a little bit of its own isolated thing right now. I don't know. I mean, they're traveling through time, right? So they could say that they're affecting the timeline of stuff.
Well, did you watch season one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So season one sets up the whole Kang thing.
Yeah, right.
So, of course, season two is going to delve deeper into it with everything going on. I think recasting Kang is not going to be that hard.
No,
like you just call it a time anomaly and move on with your life. Like we don't need to try that hard. But obviously, this was filmed a while ago. It's going to cost way too much to recast them and redo everything. Also, I mean, not to get too much in that whole situation, but we don't really know what's going on. Like, there's been a lot of conflicting reports, and I'm still not sure what to think of it.
Disney hasn't said anything.
Yeah, and Disney's pretty quick to just be like, you're fucking out. You're out.
Go. Right, right.
So we'll see on that front, but... As far as the show, like I love that first season. I do think it is littered with COVID issues,
mm-hmm.
but other than that, it was a really fun show, and I am really, really looking forward to this one.
Yeah, the trailer looks fun. They go back to like the World's Fair era style timeline.
There's ski-doos, which are important.
Yeah, so.
It's all good
stuff. That's what he wants to ride in the first season, right? Yeah. That's his happy place. I think it's gonna be a lot of fun. I mean, Owen Wilson and and Loki have good chemistry together. So I think it'll be a fun season either way.
Definitely. It's I'm looking forward to it. There's a lot of cool stuff coming out this fall. This month into next month is going to be really good. And then this is October, right? It was October 20th.
Yeah, something? October 6th. Yep. Very soon.
So yeah, we're going to be inundated with great Marvel and Star Wars stuff in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Greedo agrees. Disney Plus released a trailer for I'm Groot Season 2. The series of short animated stories featuring Baby Groot. It'll come to streaming service September 6th. Reminds me, I have to watch the first set. So now I'm going to have two sets to watch back to back of this, which will be fine for me.
Yeah, dude, it'll take you an afternoon to go through both. They're like a couple minutes long at best.
Oh, okay. They're that short. Okay.
Yeah, they're fun. They're cute. They're, you know, quick. Mm-hmm. I recommend them just because it's just fun little moments. You don't have to think too deeply about them. They're great. And I got Greedo over here.
Greedo, it'll be all right. You're missing part of your tail now, buddy. You're okay.
Hey, you want to see? Look at his rat tail.
Oh, no, it's a little rat tail, everybody.
That's because it's all shaved.
Those of you not watching video, you should at least go to YouTube and check it out because we've upped the quality on what we're doing over here. We don't do anything for the audio, so the people listening to audio probably haven't heard any changes happening in the last few years. But now we're pretty good with the video quality here, so pretty proud of that.
Yeah,
Chris has done a lot of work to get us nice and crisp. So now I can show Greedo off to everybody. It's all right, Greedo. Greedo is now the third podcaster on the show.
Yeah, he's been great this week. I mean, I know we're talking about news here, but...
That's all right. This is news.
The second day, like, so Monday we had the surgery. Tuesday, he is running around like nothing happened.
Wow.
I mean, it was great. I was very impressed with him this week.
That's awesome. Go Greedo. I would be bedridden for like 3-4 days complaining.
Yeah, I'd be crying and...
Yeah.
Telling everybody to bring me more soup.
Yeah, more chicken soup. Yeah, you gotta milk that shit, you know.
But definitely. But he just Greedo wants to go outside and murder small animals.
He just wants to go kill more small rodents. That's fine. Movie news: DC Studios head James Gunn came out on social media this week and said that the animated movies that are part of the new DC Cinematic Entertainment Universe will be released theatrically. That's pretty cool, I think. I would like to go see some animated movies at the theater.
Yeah, I gotta think the last animated DC movie in the theaters was Mask of the Phantasm.
I want to say there was that Japanese Batman film that might have made it to theaters, but I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I got no clue.
That crazy 3D one where they like turned into like fortresses.
No, that was straight to DVD.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, I remember that one. Okay, so I could be wrong. There could be something in between there, but
yeah.
Here's the thing, though. We love those DC animated movies. They're a lot of fun. They're quality written and everything. That ain't gonna slide in the theaters, dude. Like, they really gotta up their game,
right?
Especially like, dude, Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse or what
I know,
whatever they're calling them.
Yeah,
that's the quality you need. I'm not saying it's gotta be that crazy and much of a spectacle,
right, but you
I'm
gotta like, it's gotta look good.
Yeah. So that might mean we get some better looking DC animated movies, which would be great because that's my one complaint about their movies is I'm not a fan of the style.
Yeah. Yeah, some of the animation is kind of like, this needs a little work.
I know it's not, and I know people work hard on it, so I don't mean this as the slight that it sounds, but they look cheap.
Yeah, right.
And they're not terrible, but I mean, just they could definitely up the quality on those, and they could be way better.
I agree. There's a new release about the Fantastic Four movie, which is interesting, that says Sue Storm will be the lead of the story and that Disney has found their Sue Storm but can't announce it because of the strikes in Hollywood. The report says that Vanessa Kirby will play Sue Storm. Okay, thanks for pulling up Vanessa Kirby. Oh, Vanessa, I've seen her. Kirby.
She's in that new Mission Impossible.
Yeah, Dead Reckoning. Okay. I feel like I've seen her somewhere else.
Have you seen her in Mission Impossible Fallout?
Yes. Yep. She played, yeah, the White Widow. That's what I just saw. Yeah. She plays like this arms dealer in Mission Impossible. She's good in that. I think that's all I've ever seen her in.
I've never seen anything she's in.
I think she's probably been in a lot of British stuff because she's British. So that's probably why.
Maybe. Did I see Jupiter Ascending?
I did not see Jupiter Ascending.
I did see Jupiter Ascending. This movie's awful, everybody.
Yeah, don't go see Jupiter Ascending. That was the one that looked really cool and it ended up being hot garbage.
Yeah, because it's one of the Wachowski, or not Wachowski, what's the Matrix siblings?
The brothers? I thought it was Wachowski brothers.
Well, are they sisters?
And there's a sister. There's two brothers and a sister, I believe.
Well, I think the...
Either way, it was a trash.
This stuff's so confusing and I hate it. Not to go against anybody's like personal identity or anything. That's not what I mean here. But I'm pretty sure one of them transitioned, and that's okay. The one that made this movie. Because this movie's all about like learning who you are inside and all that stuff.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it just didn't land. And then the second one also transitioned. So now they're the sisters.
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong here, but
I didn't know that story because when I heard the sister, then I thought there's three siblings. So that would make more sense. Okay. Either way, it was a bad movie.
Yeah. Either way, it's just a hot garbage of a movie. So I have seen one thing
she's in. I've seen her in one thing at least, and she was good. She's British. So we'll see how her American accent goes. Oh,
here you go, Mike.
Fast and Furious, Hobbs and Shaw. Yeah, she was in Hobbs and Shaw. Okay. Yeah. All right. Two movies. I've seen her in two movies. She looks like she could be a Sue Storm.
She's got the look. I mean,
she's got the look.
You basically just need a good looking blonde woman to
yeah, right. The look. Yeah.
And she definitely fits that. I mean, she looks
and
pretty good.
And she's gonna be invisible for here. She's gonna be invisible for half the movie.
Exactly. You know? So
yeah.
Seems fine.
Yeah, and that like making her the center of the Fantastic Four, whatever. I mean, just if it's good, it's good. I could care less, right? So,
exactly. I don't care who you lead. I mean, I think Mr. Fantastic is a good supporting character,
right? But Sue Storm really keeps the Fantastic Four together when you think about it, right?
I was gonna say she is kind of the center of the team because she's the intermediate between Johnny and the Ben,
exactly.
And then she's the one that kind of keeps Reed in line, so it does make sense for her to kind of be the center of the whole thing.
Yeah, Reed ain't got no time for that shit. He's too busy being a nerd.
Yeah, Reed's been made to be an interesting character over the years, but like when you really boil down who Reed is, he's not an interesting person.
Yeah,
he's a recluse nerd who just like loves to invent shit. Like,
right.
So it would be kind of interesting to just have him in the corner for the first movie and just being that. Especially, I mean, it depends what realm they're going, but if they're going to go with the he's upset about what he did to the team and so his entire goal is to like cure them, then to kind of put him in a corner makes sense.
Yep.
And to make Sue the one that has to just keep the peace and try to bring everyone together makes even more sense. So
yeah,
I'm down with it. I have faith that they're gonna put together a good Fantastic Four movie. So
I hope so, man.
There's other rumors flying around, but like they're saying that Galactus is gonna be the big villain for this too. So
I don't care. They could fight like the Hamburglar. I just want a good Fantastic Four movie. It doesn't even need to be a galactic villain. It could literally be like Stiltman, and I'd be okay with it. Like,
I like it being Galactus because Galactus was done so dirty in the last movie or the two movies ago. And it also, they don't blow their load on Dr. Doom right away. Like they can kind of build up to Doom.
Right.
So, especially if they're doing Secret Wars, they gotta bring in Doom eventually.
He needs to be a more important character that they're not gonna just have in one movie.
When he needs to be a not quite a Kang level threat, but like if they're doing Secret Wars, which they unless I'm living in a fantasy, I'm pretty sure they announced that one of the Avengers movies is Secret Wars, then Kang has to be at the center of it. Or I'm sorry, Doctor Doom has to be at the center of it.
Yeah, right.
So it also makes sense to kind of let him build in the background over time. And then, So yeah, I'm excited for it. I kind of hope that the people with money will get over shit and let these strikes end so we can start getting stuff done again.
Yeah, that would be great.
Not hold my breath, but you know, it'd be nice.
Stop delaying things, but pay these people, you know. All right, we're going to jump to this interview with the Cthulhu crew, talk about Cthulhu Invades Neverland with a whole slew of guests, and we'll see you all on the other side.
All right, everybody, we've got another interview for you all this week. We're doing our yearly Cthulhu Invades interview. This time, I guess he's invading Neverland. So let's bring in all the creators that are joining us, starting with the man, the myth, the legend, Travis Gibb. What's up, Travis?
He can hear you, by the way.
Yes, I wrote, I can bitch.
Yeah, he says, I can bitch. What a way to start off the interview. I love it.
Next up, we've got JD Calderon. Welcome, JD.
Thank you for having me, guys.
And then we've got a duo. We've got Pete Reset. Welcome, Pete.
What's up, party people?
And Emily Reset.
Hi.
How's it going?
Great.
So we've got the Cthulhu Invades crew, and let's God damn it, Travis. So let's get into it. Travis, what is the Cthulhu Invades series all about, man?
Yeah,
I'm still trying to figure it out. We're three volumes in, but I think I'll figure it out the next one. So ask me next time. Keep just passing that down. No, it's Cthulhu, and he invades all sorts of different things that we love. So the first time he invaded Oz, second time he invaded Wonderland, and now he is off to Neverland. But what makes it, it's an anthology, but what makes it different than a normal anthology is there's one continuous story. There's a beginning, middle, and end to this. So they all connect. They're all connected in a big, larger mythos, which is pretty cool. And we have a lot of fun with them every year.
Definitely. And I know you got the new one coming. It's on Kickstarter. We're going to talk a lot about it, but we haven't had a chance to talk to you about how was it being nominated for the Ringos?
Oh, dude, it is so amazing. I never would have expected to be able to be nominated for the Ringos, because you always assume that that's for, like, you know, direct market stuff, you know, mainstream, as you will. And the fact that, you know, not only does the industry pay attention to Kickstarter, but actually views them as someone who's up for awards, which is really cool. I mean, I'll probably lose traumatically, but I'm excited to be nominated. I am now a nominated creator, and I just brought like 70 other creators so they can add that title to all their resumes and amazing bullshit on the internet. So I'm excited to really exploit and really devalue the Ringos.
It's tanking as we speak. It's just, it's a right cliff. It's a cliff. It's gone. Honestly, I think the nominated is worth more than actually winning, because now you just use that wherever you want.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so there you go. You have the title. Yeah.
Yeah, and so, Travis, I guess we'll use you a little bit here as a third co-host. Why don't we we already introduced our panel here, but why don't you introduce them by what their story is all about, since you were the puppet master of this whole shindig.
Sure, yeah. I'd love to. So let's start with Emily Rizet.
there you go. Go for it.
It's going to really fast. Yeah. Well, you said I was a co-host. I'm in. I'm ready.
Yeah. Let's go.
I'm down with Emily being first. She's obviously wearing a Pikachu shirt right now, so she's got...
Yeah, Pikachu Libre. Yep.
Oh, that's amazing.
This we're is best not mine.
But if it's the boyfriend's, it basically is yours.
Yeah, I took it, so it's mine. Yeah. He's not getting it back, so.
Nope. There's so many stuff that are out in the ether that I want back. Oh, yeah. We'll never come back.
It's never coming back, Travis. Just, no.
So Emily's been with us for all three volumes. What's really cool is it's kind of leveled up with her age. I love to tell this story. So Dorothy is the youngest. That was 14, Emily?
Yeah,
14. Yeah, Dorothy's around 14, 15. She then did Wonderland with us. She did, and then she was 16. Alice is 16, and now we're in Peter Pan, where Wendy's closer to 18, which is really cool, which is where she's at now, which is really kind of fun to do that transition. And then you see her art. Her art, everything has grown tremendously. being part of that, which I think is so cool. She did the Dorothy story with me in the first one. Second one, she did, who'd you do, the March Hare?
Dormouse.
Dormouse.
Yeah.
They're the same character.
March Hare was in there for a little bit in that story, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we lost Travis.
No. Well, Emily can take over for him. Emily, so what are you doing now in this next installment for Neverland?
So in this installment, I worked on a story that follows Michael Darling, one of the Darling siblings, and kind of him just like sort of sitting there playing with his toys and everything, and then being faced with this Lovecraftian creature. And upon showing it respect, he's kind of almost like saved in a way, because he's like, all right, well, you're okay. I'll let you go.
Yeah. And which creature are you working with? Because
I
couldn't pronounce that. So you go for it.
It's Y apostrophe GOLONAC. So my best guess is Yagolanak.
Okay.
It's actually pronounced Steven.
Steven, that's where we made the mistake there. Sorry, I couldn't tell. So you get to draw the creature in that?
Oh yeah. What's
that? Yeah.
So
go ahead.
My artistic process and everything started with the fact that he was like, oh, because it doesn't have a head.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a head that. And its mouths are on its hands. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking, I was like, because you wanted it to be a silhouette at first, and you want to not be able to tell that it doesn't have a head. So I gave it a pirate hat, you know, thinking like, oh, that's what he wanted me to do. And so I sent him that, and he was like, I would have never thought of that. And I was like,
yeah,
really? Because that's like the first thing that came into my head. Yeah. But yes, he's got like hands on his mouth, he's got like long tongues and teeth and everything, and he doesn't have like a head or a face or anything like that. Very doughy.
That's okay, Emily. I didn't need sleep tonight. That's
yeah, that's right.
That's really like, that's all I've ever wanted is for you to not sleep at night. So
yeah, there
really,
you go.
Really proud of that.
Gotcha, Chris. Travis, while you had some issues there,
I don't even know what happened. Like my screen, like it wasn't that I lost the internet. Like I've been having.
I was talking about every negative experience I've ever had with you. Hope this helps.
I actually, so to have you on the show today and for me to be here, Travis, there's a stipulation that Chris has this big red button that I have, and anytime I just feel like seeing it, I press it, and you get ejected. It's awesome.
It works. I was being cocky. You're right. I apologize.
you took it a little too far with that third co-host thing. I had to just put you in your place and brought you back, so here you are.
Fair.
And, you know, just building upon what you were talking about earlier, Travis, with Emily being on throughout each series, and I believe we had you for the first interview installment back in, I mean, this was a while ago.
What? 3 years ago.
Yeah, 3 years ago? No, yeah. More than that.
It was 2020, early. Or
yeah.
It was
more than
three? Yeah. But so what's that like? I mean, do you feel like you've grown artistically? Obviously, you can see the changes in your art, right? So how do you feel about that? You know,
I think I definitely have. And what took for that was just letting myself draw things that I like and learning how to like everything instead of just trying to draw things that I don't like. I just try to appreciate everything in life a little more so that I'm like, I want to draw that. Makes it easier.
Wow. That's a very wholesome approach, I feel.
Thank
like.
You. My brain is really big and fat. I thought of that real nice and easy.
That's awesome.
So throughout the anthologies, we're dealing with a lot of public domain characters. Mm-hmm. And there's things you can and can't do in terms of the aesthetic with these different characters. How has Travis and you dealt with the, like, have you ever had a moment where you drew like, this is the Disney version of whatever, and Travis goes, no, I can't have that version because I'll get sued or anything like that? How has he dealt with that in terms of your art?
So the only time that we really had anything like that was, it's only ever been the opposite, where I've been trying to avoid Disney copyright because I've always had it in mind. So I'll do something different and not even know that that's not copywritten by Disney, and so the character just does not look like what they're supposed to look like. And then someone has to be like, no, no, you're okay. You can, like, I made, in the first iteration for Cthulhu Invades Wonderland, I made Alice's dress orange because I didn't know that the blue wasn't Disney copyrighted. Right? But I had the hardest time trying to figure out how to design Michael Darling in this story because there are no drawings of him other than the Disney one. None. And if there are, there are no descriptors for him. No, like, oh, he's brunette, he has a smaller nose. Nothing. Nothing. There's no descriptors for him, so I just drew a dude.
That works. A dude works.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just remember, when Cthulhu invades the 100-acre woods, you can't have the red shirt.
Yeah. That's so disappointing.
Yeah, you have to take that back.
Well, I've met Jim Cummings, and he would let me use it, so.
Okay. Fair enough.
There you go, Travis. We got permission right there.
Yeah, I never asked him, but I just have this feeling he would let me. I can sense it. Yeah. You know?
Well, Bob Iger's the dick over there, so
yeah,
the
one you have to worry about.
I'm worried about.
Yeah. And all I remember about Michael is the red hair. I think, right? At least.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the only descriptor I can remember of that character. But that's interesting, though. I mean, I think the pirate hat idea is awesome. So that's cool that you're having that type of input on the story as well. Like, yeah, that just makes sense for him to have a pirate hat, or the creature to have a pirate
hat. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's kind of like when it's a silhouette, when you first see him and everything, you don't know.
Right. Yeah. That's very cool.
Whoa, a dog.
One of the things I think that's really cool about that particular story as well is
I have a puppy now.
Chuck, which we all know Chuck, he couldn't get the script done in time. Emily really wanted to work with Chuck. He couldn't get it done in time. And our friend John, I asked him to replace Chuck, John Westhoff, and John has such a love for the people in this indie community, even though I was willing to throw Chuck to the wolves. Not really, but like I wrote first, like, John was like, can we still get Chuck? Can I just write his script? I was like, I guess if you really want to. And they called and they talked, and he wrote Chuck's script. So it's story by Chuck to make sure Chuck was on here, which I think is really cool. I think that's a really cool commitment to the community and helping somebody out, when things are getting rough. You know, I assume that's kind of the way it went when Donny Cates had to leave suddenly with the divorce, people just kind of picking up his pieces, Alan Ewing coming in and doing that. I thought it was kind of neat. So yeah. Chuck and Donny Cates are basically the same.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
True. Yeah. Have you actually ever seen the two of them in the same room at the same time?
No.
Think about not.
It. Yes. And Donny Cates was way cooler.
Chris is trying to help. No. Shot down, man. Nice try. So moving on, we're going to defer to the third host again. Who should we talk to next, Travis?
Well, let's keep it in the family. Let's talk to Peter.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So Peter has also been in all three books, but he has been in the first one. I always like, look, you can just correct your child's spelling, but you can't. You're not allowed to write things. And then Peter's like, but I can write things. Look at this thing I wrote. I was like, no one can publish this. You literally... We do public domain. This is not public domain. He's like, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. All right. So I took him under my wing, educated him, and now he's done two stories. Well, that's basically how it worked, right, Peter?
Sure, yeah, something like that.
With a beard like that, the man was meant to write.
Yeah.
It's one of my loves for sure. But yeah, so, I was, as you put it, I was a proofreader for Oz. And I believe it was one of those, hey, you want something to do sort of conversations that kind of, blossomed into that. And I've done some editing here and there for other things as well since. And absolutely love doing that. For Wonderland, I did the Four of Spades story in that one. And here for Neverland, I've come back and I took on Billy Jukes, who is one of the pirates. He is described in the original story as being the tattooed pirate. So he has tattoos from head to toe. He's the only one that's described as such. He says, "I, Captain," and "I, Captain," and then he is killed off screen by Peter Pan in the original story. So when Travis started taking kind of solicitations for it, I was like, I'm going to take him because nobody really knows him or is going to be able to do anything with him because he's dead. And yeah. So I kind of made the decision that, you know, he's not dead. He's actually immortal. And like a lot of people that get tattoos, they get tattoos that mean something to them. Well, Billy gets tattoos about the ways that he's died.
That's cool.
And so all the tattoos on his body are all the various different ways that he died.
That's amazing that you can take a pirate that had two lines and a death scene, and you're like, no, there's more there. Yeah, that's amazing. And yeah. I mean, he's got to run out of space for the tattoos eventually, right? So
eventually, he just gets more and more and more heavily tattooed as he goes along. For a while. I mean, eventually, there'll be tattoos on tops of tattoos. You know, that sort of thing. The other thing that made it really nice was I did this very early in the process. So in our production group, I was able to tell everybody, listen, this dude's immortal. You can stick him in your story. You can even kill him. And it won't matter because my story will explain why he shows up again and again and again. So
that's awesome. You took the comic book science to a new level.
Right.
So you did. Is there a creature involved with yours? A Lovecraftian creature or no?
I do have a Shoggoth that shows up like right at the end.
Mm, okay.
Which is cool. You end up looking at the Kickstarter page, you get a bit of a preview of that page.
Oh, nice. Awesome. No, I'm looking forward to that. That's really cool.
Look at the Kickstarter page.
Yeah, we'll get to the Kickstarter page.
Hold your horses, Pete. We'll get there.
Yeah.
Pulled in Deborah Lanchi and Easy for my artwork. She's the artist on Jonathan Hetrick's Quicksand. So I've worked with her in the past as a editor on that. And she just did a bang up job. And Emily actually is the person that did the coloring on my story. And you'll actually kind of notice a little bit when you look at it too. We tried to make it kind of look like the entire coloring was a faded tattoo.
Mm, that's cool. Nice. And it's all orange.
Yeah, so it's got kind of like that pale skin instead of the whites. It's got the pale skins of the whites. All the blacks are kind of starting to turn a little bluish, that sort of thing.
Oh, that's cool. That sounds awesome. Very cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And before we talk about the Kickstarter page, we can't forget about JD. So, JD, first time on the show.
Yes.
Thank you for being here.
And thank you for having me.
And thank you for providing the lovely art behind you. So now we can direct everybody to go to YouTube and finally check out our videos because that is pretty sick. So, JD, give us the rundown in your story and Cthulhu.
This is my first Cthulhu story with Travis. It was kind of cool that he invited me in. So it's funny because he asked me to work on the Birds of Neverland. He just gave me a very blank slate. He was just like, "Look, Birds of Neverland, you know." And I was like, it took me a couple weeks to think of something. I just sent him something. I said, "Look, I says I have some ideas of what could be done." And then Travis said, can I use this character? Can I use this character? And he said, well, I got these two characters available. And there's two of the Lost Boys, right? It's Curly and Nibs. And he was like, you know, can you do something with them? And I'm like, yeah. So I fit them in there. And I think it worked out well because, you know, I love working on crazed young boys who are fearless and who just want to attack things because that's what these kids are, right? They're the Lost Boys. They're like, just out there, you know? Yep. And my idea was, you know, what happens when a crazed young man comes in contact with cosmic horror, right? Yep. What happens when he is faced with that thing that is unbeatable, but in his heart, he's unbeatable, right? So that's the story. And then there's also incorporated this Bird of Neverland, promise of family. Mm-hmm. Right. So I try to incorporate all those things into that story. You know, he says we have this thing about the boys rearing this bird, them encountering this horror that's coming from the sea, and then encountering this greater horror that's coming. And they're like, what do we do at the end? And then my climax. It's a very short story. It's 5 pages. It was actually pretty cool. So, you know, so I thank Travis for the opportunity for doing it. It's one of those things where it's just like, you know, I work on the Oswald Chronicles. That's what's sitting behind me. And so much of my energy goes into that. It's once in a while, it's very good just to hit a different gear and work on something a little different.
Yeah. get a breath of fresh air, do a handful of pages, and go back to your normal stuff. That's cool.
Well,
who did the art for your story?
That's a good question. Travis needs to answer that because he assigned me an artist, and I was just like, I got the art back, and I was like, oh, it's the time.
That's awesome.
Can you guys hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. His name's Roland Marxes. He does. He's the letterer. He's the colorist for Cthulhu. Not Cthulhu. Coins of Judas. He's a really good artist himself. One of the reasons why I asked JD to do it is Neverland's tough because everything's human. Like even like the things that aren't human are humanoid. Like the fairies are humanoid. The mermaids are humanoid. You know, a crocodile is just a crocodile. But there was one scene when I was looking deep diving, trying to give people new characters, and I found this Neverland bird. It's only in one scene, and basically what it does is it saves Peter. Peter gets knocked off a cliff. It saves Peter, and then Peter gets mad at it and tries to kill it. Because Peter's forgetful in the books. Because this bird gets super mad, being like, dude, I've saved you a whole bunch of times. We're friends. And I was like, oh, this is cool. We need to do that. Because one of the good things about Oz and Wonderland is you had all these unique characters, unique stuff. So giving that to JD. And what was really cool about it is they came up with a really cool design for it because there's no description either. Like, we don't know if it's big. We don't know if it's pterodactyl. We know that it can carry Peter Pan. That's the extent of what we know.
Yeah.
So it was cool to get JD. And again, one of the other things about JD is I really wanted somebody outside of my circle to be in this book. And JD, though we go the same circles, we don't talk. We don't hang out on the regular. I'm sometimes on a show. You know, we may sometimes private message each other, but not about anything serious. So I like that, you know, JD isn't one of those people who need the cred from me, right? A lot of people are like, hey, I need to be in this book. Travis, please help me out because they want to get their cred. JD doesn't give a shit, which is what I love about it, though, because that's the people who I want. I want people who I go, hey, man, I see your work. Oslo Chronicles isn't the type of books that I love, but I love the art. I love the style of the storytelling. I picked up the few. I've read what I've liked. It's not, you know, the Fable Goes West, like not saying your book is that, but like that kind of style is not what I love, but I do respect you as an artist. And I'm so happy to get you in on this and help, you know, kind of show some more voices in the indie circle.
Hey.
And, yeah. Go ahead, Chris.
As I say, speaking of that, how many on this anthology are returning? How many are new? What was kind of the balance there for bringing this one together?
Well, it was Cullen Bunn, and then, you know, everybody else. I didn't really care who else was
there. Name drop.
Yeah.
You know, and then Rich Duex, like, you know, I've worked on a few Marvel things. All right, you can come too. That's it, though.
You just didn't think Cullen was busy enough? Was that what it was?
Dude, I got him before, like, I realized that I was a Pokemon. Like, I didn't realize that he was going to write for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, when I got him, he had not done that. I got him, like, right. You remember when he said he did that tweet that was very vague that everyone kind of talked about where one of my companies said they're no longer in the Cullen Bunn business, which we believe is Marvel, right?
Yeah.
Which has since changed their tune. But, yeah, I got him way before that. But then I was just like, he works for everybody. That is – not as exciting anymore.
Yeah.
But it is, I would say, about 35% new. 35% new.
Okay.
Nice. That's exciting. I mean,
it's exciting being one of the notches in Colin Bunn's belt. It really is.
Yeah.
Right.
That might be better than nominated for a Ringo, honestly. I don't know. You can...
Yeah, might. Is that going to be in your ex profile now? I work with Cullen Bunn.
Well, it's funny when you go, you know, not the Kickstarter like Peter did, but on the Kickstarter, we have all the logos of all the companies. And I basically make the joke, this is basically every place that Cullen Bunn has worked.
Yeah, that's true.
We just need him to get all those credits to make us look really good.
Yeah. You're like, now that he's here, I can just throw all these on.
Right.
That's awesome.
So let's talk covers real quick.
Yeah.
So you got some cool covers, and I now have new technology, so we can do this.
Whoa.
Bam.
What? Nice. Wow. All right.
Look at this.
This is cool.
I love this cover. This is like your A cover.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the same guy who's done all three. You know, that's Etienne. I can never say his last name, but we'll Etienne, his full name, because he's Canadian and he's got one of those French names that I don't know how to say. Mm. But that's Etienne. Red Five. He does Dead Kingdom for Red Five.
Okay.
And really that's like Angela Odlin.
This one gives me a Cartoon Network vibe. I don't want to say Adventure Time, but like Adventure Time.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's like Adventure Time like line art with like Clarence character design. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sounds right.
I like the I don't know how you make Cthulhu cute, but they did it with the eyes.
Yeah.
Like very non-threatening. It's like come hang out with me, kids.
It'll be fine. Then we got the painted one. You do one of these every time.
Yeah, I love those.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, Kyle Willis does those. And I believe this is the best of his three. You know, these are always on, they're made on the book. So he paints them down on a canvas and paints on top of it.
Wow.
So it's wild. Does JD, does your wife paint?
No, Daphne, no.
Daphne?
Mm-hmm.
No.
This is hands down his best one.
Yeah.
Travis,
so he hand paints these. Is that how he does like those paint? Because he always does like cut pages. It looks like, you know, torn apart, like cut up pages. Do you know if he like puts those down and like
what? Yeah, what he does is he cuts up magazines and pastes those down and makes a mosaic from
that. That's interesting. Yeah, because I wondered how that, because that's how it looks on the last books.
For these, what he does is he takes the book and then he puts it down. Like if you zoom in right under the Neverland, you'll actually see a little Peter. Right there, which is pretty wide. He's got to scan him pretty thick, but it's a little bit under there. He's right there. You can kind of see his feet. Yeah. It's kind of hard to make out. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's right there.
Yeah.
You see all the words, and Dorothy was on one of them. Like, these are really cool. We own the Oz one. We don't own the Wonderland one because I just haven't let my wife spend the money yet. But as long as it's that powerful, she could get it. And I'm definitely owning this one. I've got to own this.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. So you got three great covers for this new anthology. And I guess that's a great way to jump over to the Kickstarter.
Yeah, so let's talk about the Kickstarter. You've already unlocked some of the, there we go. You can pull it up right here.
Right there, Travis.
Yep.
Look at that.
Almost at 20,000.
Almost at 20,000.
We might make it by the end of the episode. So let's see. Yeah.
I'm just saying, if we don't, we're just going to cancel it. And that's Chris's fault. Everybody, if you waited the book 12 days, Chris promised me a bump. And it's weird that he's doing this not live and recording it and then going to put it out later. But we'll see.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
You got two terrible writers that are also backers right here.
Right, yeah. Nobody knows those guys.
Yeah.
So talk about the Kickstarter. What do you got going on with it?
You know, it's very typical what we normally do. You know, the physical is $29. You know, ends up being $35. It's 235 pages currently. Probably be the biggest one yet because that's without the poems. That's without the prose that we have to write on this. We've got some really cool creators. Obviously, we were Ringo nominated. Digitals are $12. If you want to get all three, we give it to you for $30. As you see, we have people who work for everywhere. Look at all the places Colin Bunn's worked.
I don't think he's worked here yet.
Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah, so he, yeah. I think we're thinking Band of Bards, Antarctic, and Red Five are probably the three he hasn't worked for.
I don't think he's done Zenoscope either.
Oh, yeah, probably not. We got Mr. Pat Shan, who's representing the Zenoscope.
There you go. Yep.
Oh, you had to bring up his name. Now this entire interview is going to get flagged on YouTube.
Yep. That seems to happen every time we have Pat on the show.
Yeah, so we're going through. You got, like we said, the three dynamic covers. We got some great art here that we're looking at. It changes. The images changes every 5 seconds. I didn't read that, Travis. Wow. So
there you go.
And then here's your list of creators.
I mean, we've got some big people. We got Rich Woodall from Electric Black. We got Pat Chan. We got Richard Duak. We got Richard Farrow. Like, we even have people who aren't even on here. Like, what I can't think of how to say his name. By the Horns. How do you say his name? Makuta? No.
Yeah,
I can't think of how to say his name. But the creator By the Horns is in here. We got Mary Zabello, who does My Little Pony. Russell Nolte, Stan Yak, Tom Levine, David Byrne. All these great people have done amazing things. And me.
Yeah. Travis Gibb. Are you so you're doing the overarching story again?
I do the overarching and I do Hook. So I claimed guy this time. Nice. I claimed Hook.
Okay.
So I resurrect Hook. We can also sell all the old ones here. We sell them all. I even let Frank Martin come to play for once.
Wow.
Nice.
I've never let him play before, but I was like, all right, since this is the last one of the trilogy, we'll let you in.
And so here we got some of the interior art that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
There is a preview, 24-page preview available on the Kickstarter for everybody. Click on it, check it out. My selling point was like the bloody Peter Pan. I don't know. Oh yeah, you're pulling it up. You're getting to it.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah. I was like, hell yeah. This is not your typical Peter Pan story.
Yeah, it's gonna be rough. We've taken it, and again, this is the end of the error. This is the end of this arc. So for this is the end. There's going to be one more book next year that kind of ties all of them together. It's going to be like a shared universe. It'll have Oz characters, Wonderland, and Neverland, and that'll all be written by me, but various artists. Look at that Neverland bird that JD.
Yeah.
I don't know if JD gave that description or not. I don't remember, but it looks cool.
Right down.
Oh, right there. Yeah.
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 That is really cool.
Yeah. No, he came up with that all on his own. It came out great.
I like that bird a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It looks large enough to carry someone too, so that's good.
This is the one I'm looking forward to.
TikTok.
I want to know what that alligator's up to.
It's a crocodile.
Whatever.
it's up to being a crocodile. That's what it's up to.
It's a big dinosaur that shouldn't exist anymore, but you crazy people in Florida still let them run around.
Yeah, you give them free reign.
One of the cool things about this one compared to the other ones is we really hit the Lovecraft stuff. So you're almost to the point where we show all the Lovecraft characters, and as we've talked about in this, a lot of the monsters. We hit it really hard this time. You know, we got the Dagon. We've got Herbert West, who that's a reanimated story, Detective Thomas Malone. I can't tell you what his story is because that would ruin the story if you don't know. The Yellow King and Cthulhu. So we really hit that hard. We got the same poetry we've always had. So it's really good. I'm really excited about this. I'm really proud of it. I think it's going to really look good on your shelf with the other two. And it's been a lot of fun. And it's I think the story arc for this one is one of the better ones of all three. You know, last one we did the war between the loyal and the mad. This one we've got something similar going on, which is kind of fun. Because, you know, everyone knows Peter Pan from the Disney movies, but they don't know Peter Pan from the book. So Peter Pan in the book forgets very often. He's a child. So he does things that are fun for him. He's not afraid to murder a lost boy if it's fun. Like your child, like if you're fine, if you have kids, you know, your kid will shoot you and says, I want to be the bad guy sometimes, because that's what happens. There's stories literally in the novel where he says, you know, I sometimes don't give them the fairy dust in time to see how far I can get them to the drop, but sometimes they fall to the bottom and it's okay. There's times where they have the lost boys crying, hey, I'm starving, because he gave them imaginary food and he doesn't know the difference. Like, he's kind of wild.
That's insane.
Completely chaotic neutral, you know.
Yeah.
We just metal bookmarks. Happens. Look at that.
Ooh, yeah. The metal
bookmarks. I didn't know such technology existed.
Yes.
We've had them for a bit, so we've done them since the beginning. This is the third installment of the boat. For this one, we also created a new Bloody Red Villain set, since this is the end of the trilogy. It's right below. It's right below. Ooh, so there's cool. This set. So we gave you something new. If you are an Oz fan or Wonderland fan, you know, Neverland fan, you can pick up these really cool bookmarks, which I think are a lot of fun. So we got all the villains on there, the Wicked Witch of the West, Queen of Hearts, and Hook.
Wow. Those are cool.
And then I wrote a lot of other.
He's got a lot of add-on stuff. I noticed it's nothing from anybody else, just Travis's stuff promoting.
And for the hardcover collectors, the hardcover collectors out there, are we ever going to get a slipcase for those three hardcovers?
That is the plan. We're trying to figure it out. So for the next book, I want to have a slipcase that will fit the little book in on the side, because it's going to be small. It's going to be between 60 and 80 pages. Mm-hmm. The minimum I can to get a hardcover with a spine. We're going to hopefully get a slipcase. We're also talking about maybe doing an obuness. Is I saying that right? Obuness of the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
And you know, that would come in a slipcase, and that would be hopefully the same size as the other one. So that's our hope. I just don't know where to buy those. Like, I've never looked. Have you ever done that, JD? You've done pretty much everything in the comic industry. Have you ever done a slipcase?
I've never done a slipcase, but I do know some vendors.
I got a guy. Yeah. They have a guy for everything.
Yeah, he's got a guy. Yeah.
That's why really brought along JD. Is you have a guy for everything, and he needs the connections.
Yeah. I work with brokers, so they know pretty much everyone.
Yeah, they're wheeling and dealing. They know who to talk to.
But the question is, how do you send it without crushing it? Because if it doesn't have books in it, it's way easier to be crushed.
Yeah, if it's a plain slipcase,
sometimes they'll stick foam in them.
Yeah,
you can do foam.
No, they'll have foam inside of the slip, so you pull out the foam, put the book in.
The same thing when they do computer cases; they just have big foam pieces in them, so the glass doesn't break on the sides.
Right.
So what you can do is make special Cthulhu foam inserts.
Right,
and then touch it. Explodes into tentacles.
Yeah. There you go.
No one will ever put their books inside of the thing. Just to keep it.
This sounds like a shipping nightmare, Travis.
Yeah. This
hence why I haven't done it yet, Chris.
It's all starting to add up.
People really want the Oz hardcover. I haven't been able to reprint them. I'm hoping that towards the end of this campaign, if we have a little extra, I can add that towards the end, at least print, 50 or so for the people who want the Oz, because some people don't have it. I don't even have one. I've had to sell mine because someone really, really wanted it, which is pretty cool that I have a book that people want that. But I did want to tell you something that you probably aren't aware of. I've been lying to people for a little bit, Chris.
Oh, no.
I'm shocked.
You sound like a shock voice. The next book is not going to be 100 Acre Woods. I have been talking about it for a bit, but I feel if we did 100 Acre Woods, it'd be kind of more the same. So we're gonna split up for a little bit. So our next thing is going to be Grim Fairy Tales. So,
I like that.
We're going to be doing that. We're hoping to get a trilogy in kind of that, probably two Grim Fairy Tales and maybe one Fairy Tales, because there's a lot of great fairy tales that aren't in the Grim catalog.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of have its own marketing, its own like stuff. They won't be connected stories. They'll be just retellings of all your favorite terror tales, adding Cthulhu.
Oh man,
nice.
I better get like Hansel and Gretel chasing down a cosmic horror. that's the story I want, please. That's what I need.
Are you just gonna replace the Beast and Beauty and the Beast with Cthulhu?
Yeah. Yes, so Bella's just making out with Cthulhu. All the
tentacles. The tentacles are just over her face.
I do got to get more of that non-for-safe work. It seems to be doing really well on Kickstarter. So
when this happens, Pat Shan needs to create it.
Yep, there you go.
Because it just needs to be the sexiest thing on Kickstarter.
please do that. What we haven't talked about is the milestone rewards either. I mean, you always do this. You have always a lot of content that you're giving out to people when you hit certain milestones. I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So for every 50 backers, we're given a digital comic, which is pretty cool. So every 50, we're going to give that. Obviously, we'll have really cool stretch goals when we get to that point. But yeah, every 50 backers gets you another stuff, which on a normal campaign, that's that doesn't happen that often, but I mean, we literally just hit 400 2 days ago and we're already almost 450. So we get to give a whole bunch of digital rewards. So if you buy the digital, you're going to get a bunch of stuff added on for free, which is really, really fun. And some of the cooler books in comics.
Yeah. I think that's awesome. I mean, you said you only have to pay for the digital reward and you get all that stuff included. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's such a crazy deal.
Yeah. And, Pete, is this the collective we were talking about off air?
Yeah, that's what we were talking about off air. Yeah.
So this is one of yours, yep. Or has one of your stories in it.
Savage. Yeah, in fact, there's a few people with that have stories in that one in there. My story's in there. Chuck has a story in that one, as well as LK.
And I know Mike is a big fan of Night Wrath.
Oh, yeah. Night Wrath.
Yep, Pipe Cleaners for me. And that fits in because that's a Cthulhu-esque story.
Yep.
Yeah, we tried to get fantasy or horror stuff, you know, as best we could. Like even the Tales of Collective, that has a Cthulhu story in it. That's why we picked it.
And Savage Squashkanot, or I don't know how to pronounce that.
You said it right.
You did it, dude. You nailed it.
Good. That's that's obviously has Cthulhu in it, I guess. Oxymoron's a great book. So what else do you got in here? What's 800? Just give us 800.
Give us 800?
Yeah, tell us. Yeah, tell us what 800 is.
I don't normally plan that far ahead. That here's kind of
he doesn't it'll have 800.
But here's what I'll do. It'll be a trade. It'll be a full trade.
Oh.
It's the Venom trade. I'm telling you.
Leave the Protector, because everyone needs a copy of Leave the Protector. Nice. And even though it's digital, it'll still be a comic store version. I won't have the Spider-Man grabbing his head. It'll have the barcode.
Amazing.
Oh, man. So, yeah, this has been awesome, everybody. I think we can kind of go through if you have social media you want us to, or everyone out there to follow, or if you have another project going on you want to pimp real quick, now will be the time, and we can just go in order. JD, thanks for being on the show. Where can people find you?
They can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the JD called it on DeviantArt, same thing. In 7:30 tonight, on every Sunday night, you can find me on YouTube under Indie Comics Explained, under JD Calderon, where I do stuff like this, where cool. We talk to various creators. And as far as Kickstarter, I have my next Kickstarter jumping off tomorrow. That's the Oswald Chronicles. You'll be able to find it at theoswaldchronicles.com, or if you're on Facebook, trust me, we post it all over there. And that's pretty much it.
Great.
So as you're all listening to this, that is live. So go check that out as well.
That will be live. Yep.
Pete.
I highly recommend. 10 out of 10.
Pete, where can people find you?
They can't. I'm pretty much here in this office all the time, constantly.
If you need to contact him, contact me.
Yeah,
I'll tell him.
But, you know, head out to your friendly local comic book shop and pick up a copy of Quicksand from Scout Comics. Issue 1's out now. Issue 2 is coming out August 23rd.
Did that issue 1 sell out?
I have no idea. I know. I've got a few copies of it.
I think it's about a diamond, but not on Lunar.
Okay. And Emily, you said we could find Pete through you. So where can we find you?
So you can find me primarily on YouTube and Instagram at Emily Risett, R-I-E-S-E-T-T.
And Travis, everybody knows where to find you, so we'll just skip you.
He looks so disappointed. Don't say
wow.
No, guys.
Talk about orange cone. Come on.
You guys want to come to my home address? I can just give that real quick.
Yeah, we're gonna find you, Travis.
Completely doxed, Travis.
Yeah.
Where can we find you?
I'll be in my living room refreshing this Kickstarter because Chris made a promise and we're not there yet. And,
If anyone wants that address, by the way,
DM me. Or just back any of my Kickstarters that may come on the hold.
Chris will tell you.
Orange Cone, find us at travisgibb.substack.com. That's where all my latest information's up. I just did a really cool post about some of the cool stuff that's coming for the rest of 2023 in the paid Substack area. You can also find us at orangeconeproductions.com, where you can find all of our books, which is pretty cool. That's Broke Down and Voodoo Nations and Granite State Punk and Coins of Judas and Expired and Holiday Spirits and, you know, Sing Along, Cottage Cheese, you know, all sorts of cool stuff.
Love it.
It works.
Love it. So everybody, thank you so much for taking the time today to come on and chat about Cthulhu a little bit. It's always a blast doing these little Cthulhu Invades get-togethers. So, Appreciate it. As we say every time, best of luck with the campaign and best of luck with your independent projects. And thanks to everybody out there, the link to the Kickstarter is down in the show notes below, so make sure to check it out and click on it, because I made some promises that I shouldn't have made, and you need to fulfill those promises for me. I don't ask you for anything, so other than going to Patreon at patreon.com/fortresscomics, but other than that, I don't ask you for anything, so please do that. So yeah, thank you all for being on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Good night, guys. Thank you.
And we're back.
Cthulhu Invades Neverland. It's on Kickstarter right now. Go check it out. Lots of cool covers. They got the hardcover, which I'm always a fan of. They got just digital if you want that. So,
come on. What more could you want? Like, listen, it's Cthulhu. He's going to eat Peter Pan at some point.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
If you don't like Peter Pan, the book's for you.
Yeah, and if you've never read them, like, they're really good. Mike and I are on the back cover of issue one, or volume one, whatever you want to call it. Like, there's what's not to like, everybody?
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. Check it out. Come on. What are you waiting for?
What are you waiting for?
By now.
What is that movie? Where did I pull that from in the back of my head?
Is it Back to the Future?
It might have been, yeah.
Is it Biff? Like taunting Marty McFly.
Yes.
That's why I think that's what it is.
Yes.
Come on, McFly. Maybe someone who listens to the show will correct me as a better Back to the Future fan than I. Comic news. DC Comics is honoring the 25th anniversary of Batman Beyond. What? With a compendium of the original comic book series written by Hillary J. Bader, who was a writer on the show, and features art from Rick Bruchette, Joe Stanton, Craig Russo, and Rick Bruchette. It will feature the original 6-issue miniseries and the 24-issue follow-up from the run from the late 90s, early 2000s. It's over 700 pages of Batman Beyond comics coming early 2024. My God.
And it's over 700 pages of Batman Beyond comics I've never read.
Yes, same. How much is this, Chris? Did they give us a MSRP?
I think it's $60.
What?
For the whole thing. It's a soft cover. So
yeah.
Take that for what it is. I don't care. I'm buying it.
You want to read it, yeah. So
issue one of this goes in a decent shape for $170.
Nice.
Last I checked. Mm-hmm. So it's a hard series to collect.
Right.
They've collected it in the past for different things. But you know how DC is, everybody. Like, DC is very stingy with their collections, and you basically have to get them right away or they go away.
Mm-hmm.
So even the collections of this are fairly pricey and they're tough to get. So I'm really excited because I'm a huge Batman Beyond fan. I was not reading comics when this was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have these. I've never read them. This is like one of the holes in my Beyond knowledge. So I'm really excited for this. Really excited.
Yeah, I'll probably be picking this up too, for sure.
Yeah, and it's great. I mean, it's kind of funny because we're doing Beyond for the Bat Friends podcast, and Hillary J. Bader is like the writer for some of the worst episodes.
Oh boy.
But my nostalgia still hits for that show, and I love it. Even the bad episodes are good for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so down to pick this up, to read it, to ingest it, and just have new Batman Beyond to read, that new to me at least. So
yeah, same cool here. Stuff. That's really exciting. And it has to be from, you know, Lansing and Kelly and their big popularity they've brought for that character. Come on, right?
Listen, the fan base for Beyond is huge, and they're mm-hmm. vocal, and that's why I think when that Batgirl movie was announced and they were saying like that's going to be the Batman Beyond movie, we all kind of sighed, not because we're right. like screw Batgirl, but because we're like, come on, like do you have the chance to do Beyond, once in a lifetime chance to do Beyond right, and you kind of fumbled it by pseudo doing it with a different character.
But, yeah, there's already stories there. Just take from that.
There's just there's already great Batgirl stories that could have been done as a movie. You didn't have to take away from Beyond to do Batgirl. You could have done both.
Right.
And but enough of that. I just, Beyond's huge. People love it. I'm glad to see it get some recognition and a big print copy of all these that we desperately need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Marvel announced that Cap Wolf is back. The werewolf version of Captain America will return to comics this October. From writer Stephanie Phillips and artist Carlo Magno, the series will unite the Howling Commandos and Cap Wolf in a World War II story. That looks awesome. Hey, maybe we get Phillips on the show and talk about that. That'd be cool.
That'd be awesome. I love Cap Wolf.
Is that a Ryan Brown cover? Damn. It is. That's awesome.
It's the Ryan Brown cover. There's some great covers for this. I mean, I love this one too.
That is so cool.
Cap Wolf is such a fun story. I have, not only do I have the trade of it, but I have the original issues too.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's exactly what you think. It's Captain America as a werewolf.
Oh, that one's really cool.
What more could you want? I mean,
the Boris Karloff cover. That's so sick.
Yeah. And listen, this also hits in two ways for me, because not only do I love Cap Wolf, but I love Captain America in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's my favorite era to have him in. He just fits so well, and those stories just create something for me that works. This is going to be the book for me this fall. It's,
yeah,
there's nothing else coming out.
That's really exciting. I might have to check this out too. That looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, and to have a great creative team behind it too is cool.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Stephanie Phillips, hey, started with a hockey book, and here we are writing Cap Wolf.
Yeah, hockey book on Kickstarter, everybody, and now we're here.
Marvel announced that Daredevil is returning to his controversial black and red suit for series set during the 1993 issues of Daredevil. This series will be called Daredevil, Black Armor, and written by DJ Chester with art by Nathan Diaz. Okay, that is a weird looking suit, man.
Yeah.
He is. That is totally 90s, though. I will give them that.
It's 90s as fuck, man.
Yeah. That is some ugly ass armor.
These issues aren't as bad as people make them out to be, in my opinion, but they are 90s comics, so they're not good.
Yeah.
I'll get it. I mean, it's
that's cool
this cover. This cover here. Everybody look it up. This is actually done by the artist who did all of the art design for the newest God of War book or God of War video game.
Nice.
Really talented dude. But I'm down. It's another Daredevil book. I very least I got to have it for my collection, but it's interesting. Now we've gone through kind of the seminal 90s books that we can go back to. We've done the Spider-Man black suit. We've done the Hulk book from Peter David. We've done the Fantastic Four with the new Fantastic Four. So now we're doing Daredevil Black Armor, I guess.
like what else we got back here? Oh, yeah, there's this thing. We could do that, I guess.
So it'll be interesting to see what else they do. It's going to be fun, but I'm down to check this out.
They're like, maybe this is how we should have done in the 90s. Slowly introduce these changes one at a time and see how they land. No, let's just do it all at once.
This is comics, Mike. We don't do anything slow.
Yeah. This is cool. Dark Horse announced a new comic series coming from the great and powerful all-writing writer Cullen Bunn and artist Brian Hutt. It's a cool cover. It's the creative team behind Six Gun. The series will be called Midnight Show and be 4-issue series that is said to be the tale of a cursed movie production with creepy creatures everywhere. Speaking of Boris Karloff, that looks like a total old school like monster movie cover. And so does the title almost reminds me of like Tales from the Crypt or something like that. So yeah, this looks really cool.
Yeah, not the biggest horror fan, but am a fan of like vampires and kind of the universal monsters aesthetic and everything. So I'm down to check this out.
Some cool covers there.
Yeah. And you know, it's always good to have. I can't read everything Colin Bunn does, but I got to read some because I love the man, and he does some good stuff. So I'll be adding this one to the list. It's four issues. It looks like a lot of fun. I mean, this cover alone, I got Wolfman, you got Dracula, you got Frank, you got everybody here, man. Mm-hmm. The swamp creature, you got so much good stuff. So
yeah, the like mummy, that's really cool.
Yeah, it looks like some Colin Bunn. Books.
Colin Bunn's still doing cool stuff. You know, still has time to talk to us from time to time. So
to go back to our interview, Colin Bunn did a story for Cthulhu Invades Neverland.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
So
the dude's hard at work.
Yeah. I guess we'll talk about what we read this week, Chris.
What'd you read, Mike?
I read one book.
Oh, is it JSA number 5?
No, it was actually Night Terror's Joker number 2. It was a great issue. Rosenberg, Raphael, Chris convinced me to read the Night Terror's Joker, which I ended up loving. And this issue was like, it's just more hijinks ensue of him being Batman, and he has a family hiring more villains at Wayne Enterprises. It's a very graphic issue. Like, and I was like, maybe this should be labeled Black Label. No, it's not. It's fairly graphic just on its own. And it's like him and all the Batman rogues gallery, like waking up from their nightmare at the end of it. So they're all in it together. It was a great story. Two issues. These things are fun, man. Two issues in and out. A lot of fun.
Yeah. So I'll stick with Night Terrors for a second. Cause I caught up on everything. I read Night Terrors number 2. It was really good. You talked about a lot last week, but
yeah,
Night Terrors fantastic. And then, yeah, there's Night Terrors Joker number 2 was awesome. Night Terrors Batman number 2. Was really cool too. It definitely comes full circle and brings Batman back to the real world, but they don't quite explain how.
Mm.
And I think it's going to be explained in Night Terrors 3 because he wakes up with Damian looking at him. And there's this great panel where they do the Zernar Batman,
mm-hmm.
but they do the different ones. So one's like the Dark Knight Returns, Zernar.
Oh, yeah. So on. That's cool.
And it's him attacking those terrors. And really, I love this one in particular because if not only does it directly tie into the main series, but it works for Batman in a weird way. So yep. I think everybody should check that one out. And then Night Terror's Angel Breaker, which I picked up because I was told everybody said, like, this is the best Night Terrors book. I love this one. It's really not that good.
It's not that good. They just wanted you to buy Angel Breaker, dude.
Yeah. Like, I don't even know who Angel Breaker is.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I will not be picking up issue 2. I didn't think it was that great. It's the first Night Terrors book that I really just did not like. So I'm going to go some old books real quick because I caught up on some things. I read Wanted finally, what, 10 years too late.
Yeah, a little like that. Yeah, damn, dude.
But there's a reason. So I read it. It's good. It's still a great premise. I think it's a decent book. It's a little edgy. Like, it goes a little too far in moments. And early, I think that's what Millar was going for.
Yeah. He was trying to ruffle some feathers.
Yeah, he's trying to make a name from, like, that's the first book that broke out from Millar. So
yeah,
that's him trying to make a name for himself. But like, just buyer beware, it gets a little edgy at times. I thought he like talked about raping too much.
Yeah, a little too much.
But overall, if you get past that, it's a cool story. I like the whole the villains take over and everything. And I read that because Big Game number 1 came out, which I'm surprised you haven't read yet.
No, I haven't.
And it's basically a sequel to Wanted that crosses over all of Millar's stuff.
Okay.
So we get the criminal empire and Wesley at the head of it now. And as he's sitting in the shadows doing his thing, everything that's been happening in the Millar books, so Ambassador and Jupiter's Legacy and was it Starlight mm-hmm. something?
Starlight, yeah.
All that's been happening in the same world.
Okay.
So he's watching the rebirth of the superhero and is now thinking like, we need to take care of this now before it becomes a problem. And we have another 1986 issue, mm-hmm. which to anyone who doesn't know, that's when the whole wiping out of the superheroes happened in the Wanted book. And they decide to bring in Nemesis, to help them.
That's awesome.
So this first issue is really setting up that that's what's going on. And we see some of these other characters from the different books. There's a great line. Did you read Ambassador when it was coming out? I can't remember.
I think so. I'm trying to remember what that one was.
That was a recent one where a woman in Korea found the formula for superheroes and then was trying to create a different superhero for every continent.
I don't think I saw it. No, I didn't read that one. I didn't know it was a Mark Miller book.
Yeah, that one's a good book. It's, but in this, so it, in that, they never found one for the U.S.
Okay.
And there's this great like comment in this where she's like, yeah, we still haven't found somebody for the U.S. because whenever we pick somebody, half of them hate them and half of them love them. And that seems to be everybody. And it was just like such a great line to explain the United States right now.
That's amazing.
And then, yeah, a bunch of other cool stuff. Like in this universe, COVID was created by Wesley and the supervillains as like a trick.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually the one of the variants was actually created to take out COVID and become less deadly by one of the super people.
Wow.
To like trick them. Yeah, it's, there's a lot of cool stuff in here. If you like Millar stuff, I don't read everything he does. That's why I think you in particular will enjoy this more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I still really enjoyed it for what it was. So good stuff there. Let's see. Last week we had Avengers number 3. That was really good. I'm going to try to like breeze through because I have a lot, but good stuff. Avengers has been good. New 007 has been stellar. I've been reading 007 at Dynamite for a while, and this is the one Philip Kennedy Johnson's doing, and just good classic 007 action if you're a fan. Speaking of Stephanie Phillips, Cosmic Ghost Rider number 5.
Nice.
Kind of a weak ending, not gonna lie. The whole thing like led to this moment where we just created a new female Cosmic Ghost Rider, to which I asked, did we need another Cosmic Ghost Rider? I don't even care that it's female. I'm just like, do we need another Cosmic Ghost Rider?
No, probably not.
That's my only thing here.
I don't think Cosmic Ghost Rider's been around long enough to have another
one. No, this is only his like third book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was a weak sauce, Mike, but the series as a whole is good. That's just good. Like the last half of the last issue that you're kind of like, ugh. Daredevil Echo number 3. Really enjoyed. If you're a Daredevil fan, it does a lot of cool stuff with history and surrounds itself with his history with the Catholic Church and like basically this old Catholic Church trying to summon a demon. Mm. So fun stuff there, Mike.
Yeah, that's always a good time. It's fun Friday night.
All right, now into this week's stuff. JSA number 5. I won't spoil for you. We'll talk about more next week, but good issue.
Appreciate that. Okay.
And there's a really cool moment in this one, so I think everybody should.
The last couple issues are spoiled for me, so I was pretty excited about those.
Conan the Barbarian number 1 from Titan. It's a Conan book. If you like Conan, you're gonna like it. But it's Conan kind of in the beginning of his journey. They even time it. He's 8 years out from when he left his home. And he runs into this town. He's working with these mercenaries. He decides to quit, and that's when all hell breaks loose. And some sorcerer, wizard, something unleashed a necromance spell, and he has to fight zombies. So Conan fighting zombies. Good stuff.
That's pretty fun. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure you're glad that happened in that issue.
I was. And it wasn't like... I still enjoy zombie stuff. I like when it pops up here and there. But like I said, it's Jim Zub doing it. Jim Zub's been doing Conan books for a long time. And I'm kind of new to Conan.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like from what I've read of past stuff, like it's not reinventing the wheel. It's just big old Conan cutting people's heads off.
That's all you need.
Have a good time. Star Wars, Dark Droids number 1. I love this book, Mike.
Yeah? What's so great about that, Dark Droids?
So there's a... I don't think this book works unless you've been reading Star Wars for like the past 8 years.
Okay, never mind.
Just so everybody knows.
I'm out. Sorry, guys.
But there is this thing from old Sith technology that was introduced like 2 or 3 years ago. and it's found a way to integrate itself into droids and basically turn it into its own army. So it's integrated into this Imperial Star Cruiser and starts taking over all the droids on it and kills everybody that's not a droid on it.
Okay.
And is slowly taking over different places. And then we're kind of introduced to who all the droids are in this world. Ones we know, like we've got the ones for Dr. Aphra, the killer droids. Chopper makes an appearance in this. I've been watching Star Wars Rebels.
Chopper.
And Chopper makes an appearance. I was really happy about that. And a bunch of others. And it shows how this entity took over literally everything. So even the medical droids just start dissecting the humans in the med bay.
That's awesome.
And everything. And then we are introduced to this world where droids are in control and they rule it, and they've created this religion, which actually really reminds me of Futurama, if you remember the the droids there.
Yes.
And they're, so we're introduced to them, and they all are introducing these different parts to create a new being for their covenant or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're warned that something is coming for them, and it's one of their prophecies that something is going to come and unite the droids to blah 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 blah. And then we quickly fade away and go over to the rebellion, where they're sitting around just talking about how they're going to destroy the next Death Star, remembering that everything going on right now is still pre Return of the Jedi. Mm. So they're discussing the attack on Endor mm-hmm. in this issue when C-3PO walks in, and then the last panel is him and his eyes turn purple, which is the sign that he's been taken over.
Mm.
So I fucking loved it. That's cool. It was so much fun. It was a blast. I say it probably doesn't work if you haven't been reading Star Wars for the last 8 years, because there's a lot of moments and characters that were introduced over this last chunk of runs
mm-hmm.
that make their way into this. And it's also building off of past events that they've done, like War of the Bounty Hunters and I forget what the last one was called now, and a few other ones. So there's a lot there, but it's another one of those we talked about with Night Terrors. Charles Soule is taking over Star Wars at Marvel. He's been building this thing, and this is what happens when you have somebody leading the pack and creating stories that are leading in a direction, and what continuity can do to make a story great. So I loved it.
Yeah, that's cool.
What If Dark Venom, number one, Stephanie Phillips as well. Nice. So this takes place right after Secret War, where Spider-Man comes back with a costume and does his thing, and then this really takes place when Reed takes the costume away from him and cages it, and that's when we first learn in Marvel continuity that this is a symbiote that becomes Venom eventually. And so we're still in this point where Reed and Ben are back and forth about Reed's got to cure him of his issue of being mm-hmm. a rock man. And the symbiote talks to Ben in this one, and Ben actually frees him instead of being screw you and moving on. And it leads to a bunch of events that give Ben the Venom symbiote that then lets him transform back to human. Mm-hmm. But also Venom messes with your mind, so he infects him. And that's when the lizard comes and attacks him, takes it away from him, and kills Reed Richards. Wow. So then Ben has to come back to the Baxter building and defend the rest of the Fantastic Four, is unsuccessful, but then is successful of taking the Venom symbiote back and kills the lizard in front of everybody. Nice. Becoming this anti-hero villain. It was a really cool What If story. I really enjoyed it. Adventures of Superman John Kent, number 6. This is the final issue of the Injustice Saga. Apparently Superman can be defeated with a hug, Mike.
Really?
All it takes is a hug.
Just a nice hug.
Just a nice hug. John gives this huge speech to everybody and tries to solve the issues of the Injustice world.
Mm-hmm.
And before he's able to, Cyborg just like, nope, and sends him back to our universe. It was an okay issue. I thought the journey was much better than the destination in this. But yeah, his big plan to defeat Superman is to get all of his Injustice League away from him and then just give him a hug and say, it's okay, Dad.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of lame.
Yeah, that's not the big fight I was waiting for.
No, but I still think this series was enjoyable. It's not enough to, like, they introduce a new, they say he'll be back in another series here.
Uh-huh.
I won't be back. I was here for Injustice, not John.
Yeah.
So that is what it is. And then we talked about a little bit earlier, Mike, but Peacemaker Tries Hard, number four.
Yes.
So I actually took notes on this one.
Oh, nice.
So first, there's a line in here that made me laugh, and it's Peacemaker saying, I'm not going to die because something gave me a little bite. I'm going to die the way God intended. Mid-fuck eating a club sandwich, I just dipped in honey mustard.
What the hell? What the hell?
Which is now my new slogan in life.
There you go.
Yeah, so him and Red B get to this island and they fight Snowflame. We talked about that.
Yes.
But they go full Snowflame. Like, he has a giant mound of cocaine and he just dips his head in and starts shooting.
That's all I expect out of that, man. That's, if you're gonna do Snowflame, do it right.
It's fantastic.
Full throttle or nothing.
At one point, like, Peacemaker's just like, did that dude get superpowers from cocaine? Oh, here it is. Whoa, cocaine gives this guy superpowers? All it did for me was make me grind my teeth and try to fight a bear at the zoo.
Classic.
This book's awesome, everybody.
Yeah.
If you're not reading it, you're not living life.
It's awesome.
Highly recommend it. And then, inspired by you, Mike, I read Batman, The Doom That Came to Gotham.
Oh, yes.
Really good. It's cool. You know, it's everything you said the movie was. It's a
movie is a lot of fun.
Cthulhu-esque Batman story set in the 20s with a lot of interesting twists on the villains and heroes we know.
Mm-hmm.
It reads like, you can tell, was it Richard Pace doing the art?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a big, oh no, Troy Nixie doing the art. Mignola and Richard Pace wrote it. I'm not a big Hellboy fan because I haven't read any Hellboy, to be fair. But from everything I've seen, the art reminds me of when I have flipped through Hellboy books. So I'm assuming that Troy's a Hellboy artist. It just, everything about it, from the covers to the issues themselves, just screams Hellboy.
It just makes sense.
But yeah, it's definitely worth checking out, and I do definitely recommend it.
Awesome.
And I picked this up at a Barnes & Noble, Mike.
What? Isn't that crazy? My Barnes & Noble has a great trade section. I don't know who orders for it, but there's a lot of good trades at mine.
So I didn't tell this story at the top. I'll tell it now because we have a little bit of time. I had to wait after Greedo's surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So where he had his surgery was an hour away from where I live.
Okay.
I got out of work and I just started driving there.
Yeah.
And they called me when I was almost there and were like, hey, can you wait till this time? So I had to kill like 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, sure, I'll find something to do. And I just drove by a Barnes & Noble. I haven't seen a Barnes & Noble in 6 years, 7 years.
Right.
So fuck it. I went in.
Yeah, you go in.
And left with way too many books. So I got that. I picked up the first volume of Nottingham because I've been meaning to pick that up.
Awesome.
I picked up the first book in the Expanse book series because I've been wanting to read those.
Mm-hmm.
Not a comic, but still. And I picked up the first volume of the Black Edition of, oh my God, what was that manga called? Death Note.
Death Note? Oh, okay, cool.
I've been told it's really good. I've never read it. So, and what's cool about that is, like, the, you know how like some books have the gold trim on the edge of the book?
Mm-hmm.
The trim on this is black. So the cover's black, cool. The trim's black, the whole thing's, yeah.
That's cool.
Hence the Black Edition. But yeah, so this is a Barnes & Noble book. It was interesting, wild experience in 2023 to go to a Barnes and Noble
and find Nottingham on the shelves.
That was one. I'm like, dude, there's Mad Cave books here. Like,
yeah, Barnes and Noble's doing good shit with the graphic novels. So check it out.
For their graphic novel manga section is top notch.
Yeah, yeah, they're not just getting Marvel and DC stuff anymore.
Yeah. So, Mike, that is everything I read this week. So, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Fortress Ricker on Twitter, right at that little at below. Where can they find you and or the show?
Well, you can find me at Fortress Chris on pretty much everything. I just got a Blue Sky account, Mike.
What?
So I'm on that now.
What the hell that is.
Threads, Hive, X, whatever you want, I'm there. So check that all out. And you can find the show at @FortressComics_on X. Also, fortresscomicnews.com. Remember, everybody, to like, subscribe, share, comment down below on the YouTube version of this. And if you're listening to the audio version, to give us the 5-star review in the podcatcher, your choice. And you can support the show at Patreon at patreon.com/fortresscomics. Thank you all so much for watching and or listening this week. And I'll see you all here next week.